To mark the 150th anniversary of the battle, Todd Harrington, himself a photographer, set out to recreate some of Gardner's most famous Antietam images, using the same angles and the same technology. Todd Harrington joins us now. Welcome to the program, Todd.
Well, thank you for having me.
So before we get to your project, set the scene for us. It's fall of 1862. Why did these photos matter?
Well, the photographers located near Washington, D.C., Matthew Brady's firm, I think they realized early on in the conflict that to be able to document the Civil War that was taking place was a saleable item to them. I'm not going to make any apologies for them. I think they were very mercenary in their motives. They tried to document the First Battle of Manassas. Matthew Brady was not able to get there in time. He sent photographers down to the peninsula with McClellan's army. They weren't able to get close enough to document a fresh battlefield as it appeared immediately after a conflict.
So, Todd, tell us more about the technology that Gardner used. What were they using at the time? What are you using now?
Sure. In 1839, Louis Daguerre introduced the daguerreotype. It allowed the masses to now get a photographic image of themselves. The problem with it was there wasn't any way to make copies of that image. So they were one-offs, essentially. In 1851, Frederick Scott Archer introduced the wet plate collodion process, and it allowed a reasonable exposure and allowed multiple prints to be made of a single collodion negative. By the 1860s, it was a predominant form of photography used by the photographic industry at that time.
Apparently, these images were known for their clarity.
Absolutely. The wet plate collodion negative is phenomenal, the level of detail that you can get from these images. Essentially, you have to make your film for every image that you take. So you start off from scratch with a raw piece of glass. You flow it with a substance called collodion. The collodion is then sensitized in a silver nitrate bath. You have to make the image, bring it back to your dark box or dark room, fix the image, and then store it all before it dries.
And they were doing this on the battlefield, essentially.
They had to do this on the battlefield, which, as you can imagine, was horrendous conditions.
These images also were an early kind of 3D, correct? I mean, these were in stereo.
Yeah, Gardner set off to do these images using a stereo camera. The stereo camera has two lenses. It sees essentially the way that our eyes would see a scene. And the stereo effect, which is fooling your brain into seeing 3D, is then conveyed. They were extremely popular at the time. People didn't travel very far at that time. So to be able to see 3D photograph of the Holy Land or the castles in Spain or something of that was exciting. It was great entertainment.
You were saying that this was very exciting for people, but listening to it now, it seems also quite strange because the intensity of the images merged with a kind of popular platform. I mean, selling these images of war seems macabre. I don't know other word.
I think that as now, the public as a rule has a general sense of macabre curiosity. If you have something that is forbidden, you want to see it. There was certainly a lot of people who were shocked by these images. But it really took them to a place that went beyond the casualty list that they saw every day in their local town. And it, I think, really put the true face of war in their minds. And from then on, we've had battlefield photographers in every conflict since.
Todd Harrington, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thank you very much.
Photographer Todd Harrington, to see his photographs of the Antietam battlefield alongside Alexander Gardner's originals, go to our website, npr.org. You're listening to All Things Considered from NPR News.